today we've got the guys from Ethereum's OS protocol, who, if you haven't seen these guys come across the timeline of late, what are you even doing? You need to be paying more close attention, in my opinion. But there was a big kind of push, and we covered it an awful lot on the podcast and on the website, of this kind of emergence of ERC-404. And then I kept getting DMs from a lot of people close to me and saying, did you check these guys out? These guys have shipped this very, very similar product or something akin to this long, long ago. So I really wanted to kind of dig deep into that, dig deep into what you guys have been building, kind of just shine a little bit of light on what's going on with you guys. And I think you've got some new stuff coming out as well, so we'll get into that. But first of all, we'll start with Vaza. How's it going, Vaza? How are you doing?
Hi, pretty well. Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for inviting us.
Yeah, no worries. I know you guys are all on like completely separate time zones, and I'm the opposite side of the world to absolutely everyone. So pulling this together, we've got some night owls in the camp at the minute. Yep. But how are you holding up there, sir?
Yeah, good. What about 3:30 in the morning here? We've got a true Web3 meeting going on here, true in every sense. So, but I'm doing good. I'm honored to be here. Thank you for having us.
Very welcome. And JP, how are you holding up? I hope it's not too late or early for you.
Oh, I'm doing well. It's 6:30 a.m. So just bright and early. Beat the sun up this morning, but excited to be here. Good to be here.
Awesome. So why don't we kind of set the scene a little bit? Maybe Vaza can start on this one, and we can move around if there's anything anyone else wants to add in, like clockwise around the board. But what the hell have you guys been building?
A lot of things, but I think that the most interesting in this moment is the items protocol, which is it was born as an experiment in late 2020, if I remember correctly, and we always enhanced them. We improved all the technology, and we started to work on it because we were thinking that the ERC 1155 standard of the NFTs was too undervalued. Is too undervalued because it is, in our vision, the empowered version of the ERC-20. Okay, but it doesn't have all the adoption in the Web3, I mean the pure Web3, that for example the ERC-20s has, and I mean for example the AMMs like Uniswap, SushiSwap, Muniswap, etc. So for this reason, we decided to give to this new standard an opportunity to be introduced in all the things that ERC-20s can do. And we thought that with the ERC 1155 could do it better. And I mean, for example, in the transfers of the assets, for example, when you have to, let's say, do something with your ERC-20s like swap or add liquidity or farm or etc., you have to approve the transaction, then you have to call the protocol, you have to move it, and then the protocol will transfer the assets for you because you approved previously. Okay, these are three operations. The 1155 is able to do this in just one operation, so which is a huge save of gas in our vision. And we wanted to bring this to the, I don't want to say to the DeFi world because it is, I don't like it, okay? Because I think that you can do several things with ERC-20s, like for example, vote. We also use voting, 1155 voting in our Ethereum OS protocol. But you can do these kind of things. And on the other side, if you are not well known in the environment, okay, you cannot push for your own standard. I mean, the 1155 used for all this stuff. So what to do? Just have a workaround. The 1155 is just an enhanced version of the ERC-20, so it can be both at the same time, 11:55 and ERC20 at the same time. So every time you mint an NFT in the Aydin protocol, you also have the two sides, 11:55 site and ERC20 site. So you can use on all this stuff. For example, at the same time, you can place an order on Uniswap V3 of an item, and also on OpenSea or Luxair or whatever. And this is extremely powerful. That is the innovation that we brought with item V1, but we wanted more. First of all, the most important thing that we solved in item V2 is the fact that every collection that you can create, you know, every NFT collection has several NFTs inside, okay? And you can just transfer those NFTs. For example, the 11:55, as you know, as the batch transfer. So you can transfer multiple items, multiple NFTs at the same time. Okay, but you cannot move at the same time different NFTs of different collections. With item V2, you can do this, because we wanted the people to collaborate, I mean, in terms of collection, okay? And this can open the path to another really interesting environment and playground, which is the games, the Web3 games, okay? Yeah. Which can, of course, bring a lot of improvement in the environment.
The use cases are pretty incredible, absolutely. But you know, as you know, items is just, you know, we're building the sandbox of Ethereum, Grant. Items is just the West Wing. It's just, you know, one thing. Really, if you take a step back, Ethereum's OS is the layer one plus, right? Represents the democratization of Ethereum. It's a no-code operating system that anybody can come in and use Ethereum's most popular functions, right? With no code, no Solidity skills, anything, one click, deploy them, build from that, you know, level up, right? And then add their secret sauce, and there you go. There's your protocol. This is for minting tokens. This is for minting ERC-404 NFT items, right? As Vazu was just describing, extremely, extremely powerful tokens, right? This is for DeFi farms. This is for factory contracts, right? We're kind of like, you know, we're kind of like the everything protocol, right? Literally anything that, you know, that you want to accomplish in Ethereum, you know, within reason, Ethereum's most popular functions, right? It's a no code environment. Come in there, no Solidity skills, go ahead and click together what you want and click and deploy. Factory contracts, on-chain, safe, secure, and it's just an incredible user experience. It's kind of like, you know, WordPress, when WordPress came online for Web2, right? And you're not having to, you know, pay a website engineer anymore to make your website, anything, you just click it together, kind of Webflow. It's the same thing with us, right? That's what Ethereum's OS is. It is literally the operating system of Ethereum. And it's really exciting, right? Because what it represents, right? Democratizing access to Ethereum's most popular functions. Because, you know, when you think about it, how much innovation in the space is being lost when people are building from the ground up every single time, right? You're taking an Open Zeppelin contract, right? In not a secure way, you're adding, you know, some code here and there, but everybody is building their own thing from the ground up, right? And we're trying to say, no, like, come here with your project idea, use our tool set, we handle the tech, you bring your idea, the innovation, and here you go. And we think that's going to unlock a lot of innovation on Ethereum.
Yeah, because there is, like, from all counts, really, from a developer's perspective, from a user's perspective, from an onboarding perspective, there's so much, kind of, so many hurdles in place for people to kind of initially get their foot in the door, whether they're going to be building something or whether they're going to be even just down to the basics of trying to wrap their head around why they have to, as you mentioned, why do I have to approve this transaction for this specific token? Like, the user experience is just so unfamiliar with what you'd come to expect from, say, a fintech app or a traditional Web2 gaming experience. Then there is no, I think we're wising up to it a little bit now, where we're trying to kind of merge these two worlds and like these two experiences. But I still think we've got a long, long way to go. And the kind of platform that you guys offer is a really good bridge in between those two experiences, I think. So I don't know if you want to kind of get into what the feeling in the camp is recently, because you've obviously had this light shed on you because of, you know, there was a lot of interest with like projects like Pandora and like a lot of VLCs that came onto the market. But is there, I think people will be wanting to know, what are the inherent differences between the two kind of protocols or standards, quote unquote, that are kind of on the market at present with yourselves and what people are pushing out with 404s. And I don't know if JP, you want to head that and then I'd say go around the table if anyone's got anything to chip in with.
Yeah, I'll start there. So some of the key differences between the ERC 404 and its various evolutions at this point, there I've seen 404 plus for what, 741. There's been an explosion in this space of, you know, these ERC 404 like tokens. And we love it because people are finally, you know, taking a lot of interest in this idea of being able to have tokens that are compatible with both, you know, an NFT marketplace and Uniswap at the same time, being able to have your assets, you know, utilize the best features of both of these. You know, Uniswap is this huge, powerful, decentralized platform that, you know, massive amounts of trading volume flow through. But OpenSeas and NFTs have had, you know, this idea of being able to place limit orders, being able to do those things. And having an asset that has both of these faces, whether it's items, whether it's ERC 404, has opened a lot of doors and has enabled trading in ways that, you know, it feels a lot more like you would on some sort of centralized exchange where you have, you know, buy orders, limit orders. You can do all these things now with this powerful token standard. But then we also have some differences. One of the key things with ERC 404s is once you drop below one and you just have a decimal amount on the ERC 20 side, the NFT is burned. The NFT side of it suddenly vanishes into thin air. It gets sent to the burn address. And then when your balance goes over one, again, on the ERC 20 side, when you have a whole one, typically it's 10 to the 18, you know, individual subunits of this token, then suddenly the NFT is minted. And this sort of has felt a little bit arbitrary. And it honestly feels a little bit loot boxy, a little bit slot machine, which obviously some people in the space like. It's obviously gotten a lot of attention and traction. But one of the key differences with items is they always have this NFT side and ERC 20 side. There's never a point where the NFT face of it gets burned and you no longer have access to it. Because we envision, you know, some interesting protocols where you might want to be able to place limit orders for fractional NFTs on Uniswap. And that's not something that's possible with the ERC 404 standards. Using the NFT marketplaces, you have to trade whole values of these. And we think that's, you know, it's sort of an arbitrary limit that doesn't need to exist here. So the items protocol, they always have both faces. You can trade, you know, decimal representations of the NFT. You can trade decimal represent, you know, whole versions on both platforms, decimal versions on both platforms. And we think that's really the interoperable layer that ERC 404 is sort of lacking in. And then there's the other features that are on top of items. That's sort of the base layer. But the fact that they're all ERC 1155s and that everything in the items collection belongs to one super collection, or really their individual sub collections, means that you can batch transfer everything together. And yet that has a lot of implications in gaming. If you wanted to sell your whole inventory to a shopkeeper and they were all ERC 20 tokens, that's, you know, dozens of transactions trying to do it in a game. And that doesn't make a lot of sense in gaming. However, if they're all items and you can batch them all in a single transfer, that's how you expect to be able to wrap this in a game. So some of the, you know, some of the ways that we've implemented it make it really sort of intuitive to do, you know, bulk transactions with one transaction instead of trying to approve each of your, you know, half a dozen assets that you want to sell. It makes sense that they're all items. Another thing that we've done with items is we have wrappers. So we didn't want anything that's already been created to sort of be left behind. if people started building on items and really using them. So we built wrappers for ERC-20 tokens, ERC-721 tokens, and ERC-1155 tokens. So you can bring any NFT, any ERC-20, and bring it into the items protocol, wrap it as an item, and it becomes part of this super collection. It suddenly gets these properties. It can have an NFT face and an ERC-20 face. It's interoperable between your platforms. It becomes part of the items collection, which means they can also now be batch transferred. So we've thought of this of, you know, we don't just want items to be, you know, a standard going forward. We want it to also be retro compatible with everything that's out there, be able to bring in all the great tokens that have been created. Because, you know, if you have the big NFT collection, you know, if you're Penguins or you're an Ape or something like that, you don't want to have to, you know, burn those, do an airdrop, go to a new standard. It'd be great if you could wrap them into the new standard natively. And we've thought of that, and we have those wrappers, and they've been live for years at this point, to go ahead and bring everyone into this new era of, you know, tokens and NFTs and our operability that we're building on items.
That's a great way to put it, JPN. And Grant, that's what I would say is probably the biggest difference, right? Between 404 and items, right? Items really is built from the ground up with these use cases conceived, right? And kind of purpose built for these kind of things, right? You know, 404, you know, I think it's really cool, great technology, but it kind of really breaks down in some edge use cases, like, you know, JPN was talking about, things like that. But, you know, items on the other hand is just, you know, it feels like we're, you know, our starting line is kind of that technology's finish line, right? Items is purpose built for going forward, right? I mean, we haven't even touched on dynamic metadata and what that does. That is, you know, quite literally the missing link for Web3 gaming and RWAs and real world assets, things like that, bringing in dynamic data alive, things like that, right? So, I mean, it just, you know, it just goes on from here.
Can you expand on that? Because I think there'll be a lot of people just listening coming quite cold on that. And
absolutely.
I know we've got an awful lot of people like this might effectively heavily.
No, this is pretty exciting. And to be honest, I'm really glad that we kind of segued here, because, you know, as exciting as it has been the last week, you know, with 404 popping up and things like this. This has kind of been the moment that we're waiting for, because we really do believe that with items is purpose built for Web3 gaming with dynamic metadata. And so we really think this is going to kind of set the space on fire and really just get every developer thinking. I mean, I have, you know, we've had, you know, 20 developers in our DMs like, hey, we want to build on this now. We want to build on this now, right? Because of everything it offers. I'm going to kick it back over to JPN because he's a lot less tired than I am, and he really does a good job explaining dynamic metadata. And then I'll hop back in and I'll actually give you an example of a developer that we're up, you know, Web3 gaming developer that we're about to partner with, who is using items, taking their user experience from the ground up and just completely reimagining it with dynamic metadata and what it does for their game. So,
yeah. So some of the talk around metadata hasn't quite taken off yet, you know, but that's really what makes your tokens, your NFTs in particular here, human readable and interesting and stuff, because it's easy enough for a contract to gate, you must own token 703, on this, you know, specific contract on Ethereum to have access to something. That's easy enough, but that doesn't tell you what the NFT represents at all. That's what's stored in the metadata there. That's the name, that's the traits, that's, you know, some rarity information, and that's the stuff that makes things more interesting on OpenSea and more human readable. And for some of these, you want static metadata. So if you have art or PFPs, those are often static metadata. It's one set of metadata, and you set it at creation, and that's just how it is. And for things like profile pictures, that's great. You don't necessarily want your profile picture to evolve over time. It's who you are. It's sort of an identity thing. Keeping it steady makes sense. Pieces of art, it also makes sense to, you know, keep those qualities the same. You don't need it evolving over time. It might be static. But there's other things, especially when it comes to like real world assets and gamings, that you don't want the metadata to be static and just fixed at creation. There was an example from someone at Chainlink, and I'm wondering if they got the idea from us at one point. But if you were to take a car and create, you know, a real world tokenized asset of it, what are some properties of the car? Well, the make, model, VIN, those are things that you might want to keep static about the metadata. But there's other properties like its accident history, its mileage, its service record, things like that, that you want to have evolve over time. Those are going to change as the physical underlying asset changes. These are things that, you know, impact the value of it, but you cannot set at creation and have be static forever. So Items was designed to have dynamic metadata. You can go in and change the underlying metadata of your NFTs as they go ahead and evolve over time. And that's, it's a really powerful feature. And it's something that you need if you want to, you know, get into real world assets, if you want to get into gaming assets that can evolve and change and be combined together. And I'll also invite Vasa up here as well, if you want to dive in any more to the concept of dynamic metadata.
There is something that I think the most of the people sometimes forgot about this environment, which is why the Web3 was born. And Web3 was born, first of all, to be 100% censorship resistant. So where is the censorship resistance where you have, when you have, for example, a picture or all the information that JPN already talked about on a server, but you have the digital asset on the chain? If the server closes, and it can be closed for any kind of reason, you lost everything. Okay, so that's why we decided to create also the dynamic metadata. It is extremely difficult, okay, to save something on the chain, a big image, for example, but you can split all the layers, let's say, of an image in tiny different NFTs, and then buying them together or transferring them together to the same address, let's say, you can compose the entire picture. That's the power, or the real power of the dynamic metadata. You can merge and put different things in that you can save without too much gas consumption on the chain, and then you can rebuild the image entirely. Everything 100% censorship resistant. That's the real power.
That's super powerful. Yeah, that's really... I mean, it quite literally, it's, sorry to jump in here, it's the missing link for RWAs and real world assets, right? And you know, like JPN was talking about with dynamic, right? One of the ways this game developer is using it, for example, is they're going to take the weather from a server and plug it in to the dynamic metadata. So when you're driving on the course, things like that, you're getting real world weather data from that location, things like that. I mean, you know, it's just, you know, custom tracks, custom cars, things like this, and you're getting, you know, real world weather, you know, that plugin that just makes the game just feel alive, right? And those are the kind of use cases amongst the billion others, right, that dynamic metadata really makes, you know, happen, right? Another one, like you talked about, JPN, was maybe for art, for provenance. You want that on the chain. You want that static. You never want that to change. But what about custodial? What about custody when your art's being custodied or something like this, right? And you want it to be checked in, things like this, right? You need that kind of, you know, element that's alive and that's pulling data from the real world. And that's where that link kind of comes in there.
Yeah, we have we've got a second podcast production called Still Early, and there's a game building on an Avalanche subnet called Off the Grid by the studio Gunzilla, and they actually have characters where... This is just like all coming full circle now for me, like hosting these separate things. And I'm just slowly starting to piece absolutely every piece of the pie together. And they'll have, say, a character where their arm, like if they're killed in the game, you could go over, like rip up his arm, and he might have bionic arm, but he might have leveled that that specific arm that's like attached to a weapon for, I don't know, for maybe a year's worth of gameplay. And then if you kill him, you can go over and dislocate it and then add it onto your character. I'm just kind of picture like thinking back to gaming a lot when I was a kid. There was like in-game items in Call of Duty where you'd, I don't know, maybe you've got 250 headshots and you might get like a gold Desert Eagle or whatever it was. And I think games on chain are getting to that point. I think they're solving a lot of UI UX issues, but I think they're probably siloed away to ERC-20 and maybe even 721 for their in-game NFT items. This just opens up the possibilities so much for them. And I think if there is anyone listening who's also a listener still early and is building in this space, that I think they need to be paying serious attention to this, because it opens up the design landscape for those guys massively where it hasn't been a possibility before.
Yeah, that's really the idea. And the other thing that makes items, you know, even more powerful in a sense is this was designed as the base. This was designed as a core. This interoperability, the dynamic metadata, the ability to have custom resolvers for that metadata. That's sort of the base layer. Items also has, you know, full documentation, and it has places for hooks. So you can build out and build upon the item standard and add your own custom implementations on top of what's already here. So the idea is all items come from a factory contract on through our system, which, you know, you can trace back on chain where they came from, show that they're legitimate, show that they haven't been tampered with. But then you can also go ahead and create a factory off of our factory that uses the core of items, and then you can add your own custom logic on top of it. So items might not be the absolute perfect token standard for every single little use case, every single game, but we think they add, it's an excellent starting point, a great base for all of these. And if you want custom logic built, you know, out on top of items, we have a system that makes that possible to easily go ahead and extend the standard, build your custom, we call them custom projections, on top of the item standard to extend their capabilities, modify their capabilities to adapt to exactly what sort of game you're looking to build, what sort of real world asset class you might be looking to do. So we see items, you know, again, not as the end line that this is how all tokens forever should look on Ethereum. We say this is the starting point for how tokens should look. This is the minimum viable requirements for tokens going forward. If you want more things, go and build on top of this core that's there and put your custom logic in there. Build out from what's already there.
Yeah. And that's, you know, when I say, you know, 404 is, you know, kind of making its way there, we really view that as, you know, kind of the finish line of what's possible, you know, with kind of that custom implementation. And this is really just our foundation, our starting line, right, with items v2. You know, like John is talking about with the custom resolvers and the hooks and things like that. And then also items v3 is coming as well. So I mean, like, you know, we are building this thing purpose built, you know, Web3 gaming devs, you know, we're building for you, you know, come check us out. So, and again, this is just the West Wing of the house, you know what I mean? And then, you know, JPN, you know, he's hinting at, you know, we have, the factory contracts and what's going to be the app store of Ethereum and things like this. So, I mean, you know, to tie it back together, I mean, we really are kind of the everything protocol. And that's why we call ourselves a layer 1+, right? You know, we sit and reside on top of Ethereum, and, you know, we're trying to make the user experience of Ethereum to be as smooth as an operating system, right? You're not coding in DOS anymore. You're just clicking start on your programs and going.
Well, and I want to jump on that just a minute to go back to a point. Currently, and as far as I know, it's been evolving quickly, but in order to deploy a 404 right now, or any of the various types of 404, you have to know some amount of solidity to go ahead and compile a contract, custom initialize it, get it launched on the blockchain through any means that you have. You basically have to have some amount of developer skills right now to deploy one of these. Items is different, though. Because we're using this factory approach, we have a front end where you can make a clone from this factory to launch your own item using nothing more than a web browser already. And this is something that's live right now on both Ethereum and Optimism. So just by going through and filling out text fields, uploading images, you can launch your own token right now in a no-code way, in a way that's currently not possible with other 404s, and you know, only just sort of begun to get possible with other, you know, older token standards where you can have these, you know, click and deploy, as opposed to, you know, trying to figure out enough solidity to compile a contract and hope that you've done it right. We have that security already built in. We have that ease of use, this, you know, front end user experience where you can do it all in a web browser with your wallet. No extra solidity needed here to go ahead and launch one of these contracts and launch your own item right now.
Yeah, and they can be launched endlessly too in the factory set. It could be cloned endlessly. And also I should say, we have a new dApp coming at the end of Q1. Our user experience is, leaves a little to be desired right now, but we have a brand new 2024 dApp coming at the end of Q1. And you know, the timing couldn't be better. And we really think that, you know, it's going to show Ethereum users a new paradigm, right? Of, you know, this is just the way that it should be used. This is the way that it should be done. So it's going to be quite interesting to see, you know, how that is. So,
yeah, I mean, I bet it's kind of just been a bit of a whirlwind over the past couple of weeks, and you kind of feel a little bit vindicated that the idea around everything that you've been building towards is, you know, you've had that initial really big ember now where things are just going to progress. And it's just like, how do you guys kind of, I know there's, you've guys got a lot of composability and a lot of flexibility around, you can use you guys as a platform and then kind of bridge away from that or add on top of or be used as an adapter and all that kind of good stuff. Is how do you kind of facilitate the next wave of kind of innovation of where this thing is going? Do you kind of lean into, I don't know, people who are building on top of and speak to these people kind of like day in, day out, see what they're up to and try and build product around that? Or do you already have ideas of where you want to kind of push product next? Like, what does that kind of product development roadmap look like given how the past couple of weeks have been, if that makes any sense? And I don't know who wants to talk that one.
Yeah. You know, I'll speak for a little bit and then I'll just have Vaza go. So, I mean, we always knew that the tech, you know, was going to proliferate because in, you know, kind of our opinion, you know, it's just a very, very strong stack. And that, you know, once people, we've never done any marketing, we've spent $0 on marketing ever. We've been heads down building for the last 3-4 years, perfecting the stack, getting the user experience to where it needs to be, fixing little things here and there, you know. We anticipated that, you know, our user base and kind of our, you know, people knowing us would really take off around when the dApp was completed. But, you know, with the 404 kind of craze and things like that, it, you know, got our, you know, early. So, I have so many DMs, I can't even answer. My Calendly is full. It's been a great week. These are all good problems to have, you know. On one end, you know, JPN and I do the business development together and kind of growth of the protocol and things like that. Like Vaza, you know, he's CEO and codes and things like that and directs our coding teams. But we're going to kind of have to, you know, kind of reimagine now that, you know, we've got this big spotlight. You know, it is an open, you know, protocol. Anybody can come and build, you know. Ethereum's OS is an on-chain organism. It's completely decentralized. The team has no control over it. Nothing can ever be intermediated. And that's another thing about builders coming and bringing their value, right? Since a certain Ethereum block, it's unstoppable, right? As long as Ethereum runs, so will Ethereum's OS. It's an open protocol. We hope people will come and use it in the way that, you know, works for them. We think that our factory contract system and people building layers on top of it as extensions is a much safer way to build. So we envision that we will onboard a lot of value and a lot of, you know, users from the space because people can clone and be sure that they're cloned and make sure there's not exploits, and they can have a known good starting point and then add and go from there. And developers can also monetize those little extensions and pieces that they add, right, to their factories. But yeah, we're gonna have to kind of, you know, think about that. You know, we've got a lot of exciting things in the works. The most important thing right now is just heads down, finishing the sandbox. You know, we're almost at the finish line. And then, you know, we kind of go from there, I think. So, yeah.
And our process of building has largely been, well, we have some idea of where the gaming space, and we have some idea of where the real world asset space is going to go. And we've built out a base that sort of, you know, we would hope, you know, addresses the needs of what the, you know, of what those areas are going to become, not what they are now, but what they're going to be in, you know, a few years. But really, we're also learning stuff as we're talking to different game developers here. We're getting feedback, and they're saying, "Oh, we had this idea to go ahead and do something on the stack," and we're like, "Well, I think you could do it with that, but we haven't, you know, quite given it a ton of thought. Maybe we can make it a little bit easier to go down that path if that's something that you're building your game for, trying to incorporate in your game." You know, we want to make that easy to go ahead and go down a particular path that, you know, might technically be possible with our base layer, but that we haven't, you know, given too much thought as, oh, maybe games do want to go down a particular path here. Maybe we need to help blaze the trail in that direction just a little bit, you know, tweak things, tweak our documentation, try to build out some examples where it's easier to follow down that path. And maybe Vasa can even join in here with where items started and how we're developing them going forward.
For the future, guys, let's say I don't like to talk about the future because things change dynamically really quickly. But all that can I say is that we always were busy on, let's say, four pillars, okay, which are the tools for the environment, because working in this environment is pretty exciting for all the developers, because you must build all the tools that people can use. And for example, in this case, I am referencing factories and dynamic metadata, which are not two products, are just two tools, libraries in the world of development, okay? And we have items, and we, with our items, you can vote on your organizations, which are cloned. And all the organization can have, for example, farming factories that we already developed with our Covenants section of the protocol that we didn't mention today. And also items use dynamic metadata, but also factories and organizations can use dynamic metadata. And those are already unexplored fields for us because of, guys, we are just human beings, okay? We need time to do all the stuff. And so, all I want, what I mean with this discussion is that we have these four pillars, I mean, tools, items, organizations, and covenants, and that can be merged in several different ways. So we are going to work in this direction. Now we are experimenting what we will release in the future, just using our own products, services, tools.
Yeah, and the tools are out there. We have our GitHub is full of the documentation and the code for some of these various tools. But the tools are there for anyone to go ahead and pick up and build with. It's not exclusively us. We're not the only ones who can build on with these tools and on our stack. It's a sort of base layer. We have tools there that we think are really powerful and that we invite people to go ahead and use. And we have this base layer of a factory system where you can add in, custom fee logic for either usage or cloning fees. We have that sort of base layer, and we invite everyone to come and, you know, start using these tools, build upon the base layer, build your protocol, you know, here, build up from where we're at. Use these tools. Bring your own tools as well. You know, you're not, it's an open sandbox. Yeah. You can bring your own thing here as well and use it in conjecture with our tools to go ahead and build your own protocol using what we've already built and the tools that we've developed for building.
Yeah. I've just real quick, Grant, I've had three different game developers this week tell me that they think they have to stop developing on the L2 that they're on and they have to come to Optimism because items is too strong to ignore. They cannot, they're, you know, the user experience they're imagining for their game was not possible before items. And now that they found out about items, they can't unsee, and they have to come over to Optimism. And that's not to say that we're not going to, you know, expand onto other L2s and things like that, but I've had three game developers that have told me that and signaled that intention. And we're talking there 2 to 3 months, or who knows, they didn't get into specifics. I mean, they said they were, you know, deep into development process. They need to see how it's going to go, you know, with porting everything over to a different L2. So it's pretty incredible.
Well, that's the thing for me. It opens the design space up massively, where it previously was more of a botched together rendition of something, and maybe some parts are handled off chain, some parts were handled on chain. That's just from my previous experience of even playing some of these quote unquote games. I don't think the first iteration of what we knew as kind of Web3 gaming was there. I think some of the stuff that's coming to the fore now is really, really, really impressive, and I think people are going to get a huge shock. But if you're a developer with so many moving parts, particularly with a game on crypto rails, having a kind of toolkit to just go and being able to expand on this kind of design of like on this new kind of token design, and having it there without having to go and create it yourself, which was previously kind of probably a really nice to have, if that makes sense.
All right, thanks for listening. If you enjoyed the show, please give us a like, subscribe, and turn the notification bell on for next time.
See, I think it's just kind of the proliferation of how this stuff moves. I think gaming probably does drive it forward, and then people look at how gaming adapts it, and then probably you're gonna get some really interesting stuff in the world of DeFi, I think. And I'm just so excited, because I think we were getting a little bit stale in the space for a long time. And obviously you guys have been around, but I think the resurgence has kind of shed a huge light on what you guys are building. And I don't know, is there anything like weird or funky that you kind of have seen that's a little bit left field that people have like approached you guys about? Is, I know the gaming and real world assets is a pretty big one. Is there anything like aside from that that might be
catching somebody wanted to use our governance? Yeah, somebody's suggested a new member of the community. They were kind of rabbit holing in and looking at our organizations, our DAO tooling product, which is, you know, very, very revolutionary. And you know, because everything is handled on chain, for example, we're not like Snapshot, where communities will have to go and record on Snapshot and then they rely on a centralized entity or the leaders of the DAO to implement the decision. No, everything is on chain. So we're talking, everybody votes on chain, and the, you know, the vote tally, when it happens, the code is automatically executed on chain. There's no chance for intermediation or anything like this, right? And the way, you know that DAO members can control their treasury just by a simple vote, things like this, right? And you know, these kind of things, right? But we had somebody who said, I can imagine, you know, the SEC. The SEC being an organization on Ethereum, and we said no. Even if it would work for them, we don't want them. We're decentralization maximalists. Do you remember that, John or JP, during the spaces? Or they said the U.S. government, something like that. Because we have this, you know, we have you know what are called delegations, and they're like sub DAOs basically, but they can attach to organizations and attach to different organizations, like a gig economy for Ethereum, right? So if they're a marketing delegation, they can go attach to the Ethereum's OS organization, provide services for a couple of months, and then here comes, you know, a different organization, right? Here comes a Link organization or something like this, right? And they, Chainlink, and they want to go provide their services to them. They can detach and go there. So there are these really intricate economic coordination rails that really put the incentives in place for people to have skin in the game in a flat structure, because that's what we see, right? Is that, especially during the DAO craze and things like that, it was like, oh, hey, great, we're a flat horizontal structure, we're a DAO, right? Inevitably, right, you had powerful DAO members and you had less powerful DAO members and things like that, and people didn't feel like, and especially with, you know, off-chain and centralized services, right, and people feeling like their vote doesn't really count, things like this. But, you know, when you're on chain and your vote counts and you can see everything is on chain and the tally and things like that, and the code is automatically executed, no chance for anybody to jump in there and say, I don't like that, that's, you know, that's going to lose me money or something like that. Well, then people get a buy-in, right? They feel like they have skin in the game, and that's really kind of what powers, you know, these organizations. But, you know, and kind of like what Vaza was saying, like, you know, the financialization of, you know, real world assets and being able to hold a basket of assets in your treasury and be connected to the outside world and real time data from, you know, what assets are doing. Maybe your treasury and your DAO holds, you know, a wrapped S&P 500 or something like this, and it's pulling in real time data, something like this. I mean, it's just, the possibilities are just endless.
I think you guys have timed something else perfectly as well, because I think we're going to see the real power of sub DAOs with Maker's end game product. And I think I think a lot of people on the periphery are still like a little bit in the dark how that's actually going to work. But we interviewed Rune at Token 2049 last year, and then it clicked, and I was like, oh shit, sub DAOs, this is going to work. But it's like, oh, yeah, just separate coordination factor. And I think, instead of, as you'll well know, sometimes DAOs are like you've got the central horse car and then you've got a million different horses on the outside all like pulling in separate directions. It tends to go slowly in one direction as opposed to everyone pulling in one direction. But I think you guys have probably been way early to this whole thing. And I think Maker is probably going to shed a lot of light on how powerful these kind of things can be, because, as I say, yeah, sometimes you get a little bit jaded in these conversations. And
you should hear how our organization, you know, because Ethereum's OS really is a DAO as well. Like our, mm-hmm, you know, our token, every time a factory contract is launched, right, every OS holder gets direct value from that. And how much value is a user definable value. People vote on that. You can submit a proposal and vote on that. And people go back and forth with discussions of, you know, it's like a real business, like growth versus revenue, things like that, right? And that's all 100% on-chain controlled by users. But our organization's been running, what, 2.5 years now? Almost 2.5 years now, right?
Yeah.
JPN, and right, Vaza? It's incredible. I don't know if you want to, I saw your mic off there, if you want to say something about JPN. And like Vaza mentioned, these organizations are clonable. Everybody can come in, right? Somebody, you know, for example, who could come in and right now, Maker could come in, create an organization, set the Maker token as their governance token, bring their whole community in, move it on chain, make it decentralized, allow their community to have skin in the game, right? Vote on decisions, vote on where the treasury goes, things like this, right? Theoretically, you know, and it's something that we hope is that, you know, we will onboard a large majority of organizations and protocols to our system, because, you know, we think that decentralized structures like this are the way forward for the space. We're still relying on too much trust. We're still relying on these systems that don't allow, you know, participants to really feel like, you know, they have skin in the game, things like this. And so, you know, it's, you know, props to you, Vaza. It's just incredible, these structures that have been built, you know. But John, if you want to say anything, I'm kind of babbling here. I get too excited, Grant.
That's fine.
I mean, all of the excitement around ERC-404 sort of shed light on items. And as we've been saying, that's one portion, that's one tool that we have in our arsenal. That's one portion of this operating system that's been built on Ethereum, this L1 Plus. That's not the only tool. And we hope that this is not the only time people get really excited about, you know, a core idea or a core concept that we've already built a product out on, that we've already given a lot of thought to, already have some, you know, interface to deploy. You know, if people want to talk about governance, We have our governance solution. We hope that people get excited about governance so that they're willing to come in and listen and learn about what we've already built here as a governance stack. We hope people get excited about sub-DAOs and when I hear about delegations and how they work. We hope people get excited about automatic routines. We hope people get excited about self-funding. We have, you know, protocols. We have tools. We have pieces already built for all of these different things. And we really hope people get excited about them like they've gotten excited about, you know, tokens with 404 to come in, check out what we've done, listen and hear what's already been built. Come in and explore the ecosystem that's already been laid out there and ultimately come build on this stack, come build with our tools. And Vasa, I know I saw your mic off there as well if you want to jump in and say some more, but come build with our tools. We want people to get excited about governance. We want people to get excited about these different things.
Right.
Well, it's true, JPN. The best tools are created when people use them because they evolve, okay? So what is on the space on our protocol right now is our vision, okay? But this doesn't mean it is the best for everybody, okay? Someone can have different ideas, even pretty simple, okay, that can improve the entire protocol itself. So please come and develop and just tell us what we can improve and how we can improve. For example, something that we are really excited for something, which are the layer twos, because when we designed the dynamic metadata, I come back on that, okay? Layer twos don't exist, even because dynamic metadata concept was, I started the first concept 5 years ago, 6 years ago, I don't remember that, okay? At that time, saving something on Ethereum costed a lot, okay? But now that you have the layer twos, you can improve that. And you can do everything just if developers, a lot of developers come. So come, please, and start using our tools.
Yeah. Just a lot of innovation, a lot of novelty in this protocol, Grant. You know, we have a cross chain, we have a colonies product, which can move fees from layer two to layer one from, you know, organization, things like this. I mean, just a lot of well thought out, purpose built systems to solve real world use cases, right? JPN mentioned, right? One click token launch, self funding mechanism. You know, how much innovation is being held back? Right. For example, maybe meme communities, they have the perfect meme idea. They want to launch their own token. They don't have money to create, you know, this or that. They don't have, you know, resources to go and pair liquidity. You have a self-funding mechanism, right? How much innovation is waiting to be brought on chain by, you know, these barriers to adoption? And that's, you know, that's our goal is, you know, we're trying to kind of crash these barriers and onboard the world to Ethereum, right?
There you go. So I know there's a lot of founders who listen to this, and I know there's a lot of people who are building on in their own ecosystems and networks. And I leave all the links below. If anyone wants to reach out and needs to put in touch with the team, just please just shoot me a message. I'll put you in touch. But gents, thanks so much. I know that was difficult to coordinate on time zones, and I really appreciate it's all kind of getting
pleasure's
up
all up ours.
The hours
so
and coming on. But maybe we run it back in a, I don't know, two quarters, see what's going on your end. I'm pretty sure the proliferation will have continued and, you know, we'll be able to see more adoption of what you guys have been building in the wild, because I think it just makes sense from a lot of, let's say, gaming, real world assets, a lot of DeFi stuff that I'm trying to think off the top of my head. And yeah, I look forward to see what you guys build and wish you all success going forward. And just let us know if you need anything, always happy to help. And thanks again for coming on. And yeah, I think that's it for this week.